This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Our guest today is Father George Pyle from the Greek Orthodox Church. Welcome, George.
It's nice to be here, Steve.
We'll be talking about the topic, keeping the holidays holy, and the problem of secular encroachment into feast days.
That's right.
Now, why did you think that would be a why do you think that's a problem?
It's a problem, especially this time of year. We tend to get caught in the trappings of the tinsel and the glitter and forget, for many of us, not only Christians but our Jewish brethren, the real essence of what people are celebrating. And today I want to look at that with you and discuss it, and hopefully some people will call in and tell us how they're keeping their holiday holy.
And for listeners to do that, let me give the phone numbers very quickly. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We'll get you on the air with Father George. That's 333-WILL in Champaign-Urbana. Elsewhere, listeners can call in a toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. So anywhere where it's a long-distance call, use 1-800-222-WILL. And that includes listeners on the Internet. Anywhere within the continental U.S. may call us. The program is heard live on the Internet and can be heard on the archive at WILL.UIUC.edu. Father George, let's look at this topic from an Orthodox perspective. When do you celebrate Christmas? Because it's a little different.
I wish that was an easy answer. Most of the Orthodox Church, but not all of it, celebrates Christmas on the 25th of December with the Western Christian brethren. But the there is a group within Orthodoxy, the Russians, the Church of Jerusalem, the Serbians. They celebrated on the 7th of January, difference of 13 days. And that's the difference between the old and the new calendar, Steve. And okay. My jurisdiction, my Greek Orthodox Church, celebrates on the new calendar. So we'll celebrate on the 25th. But some of my Serbians will come on January 7th when I have a liturgy, and they will be celebrating. For example, my Serbians and my Russians, they'll be celebrating Christmas on that day.
And your congregation includes how many different types of Orthodox or branches of Orthodoxy?
We have people that herald from Romania, Russia, Serbia, Lebanon, Egypt, Greece, Cyprus, America. Mm-hmm. And if you came there, I think this morning we have the Lord's Prayer. It has to be their native tongue. In about 7 languages, which is small. We've been up to as many as 12. Again, depends on who is there. And if it's their native tongue, we highlight them by them saying the Lord's Prayer. And it's a wonderful feeling. It's a feeling of Pentecost every Sunday as you see all these people coming together. Orthodoxy is a world religion. It's throughout the world. And so it's not just particular to Greek people or Russian people, although that's what we tend to think of when we think of Orthodox Christianity. We think of those two groups.
Now, you're currently celebrating Advent.
We are.
And looking forward to Christmas. Tell us a little bit about Advent in the Orthodox tradition.
Well, the time of preparation for Christmas began on November 15th, 40 days before Christmas. And for the past 40 days, we've been abstaining, going without meat and dairy, we've been allowed fish up until the last week, and now we are almost vegans, if you will. No animal products whatsoever as our spiritual discipline. And we have a whole sense of prayers that we've been going through and time for reflection. People have been coming for confession. And that whole sense of putting the holiday in perspective, preparing for it, making it holy. And people are preparing right along the way. And then, of course, on the 25th, we will break the fast in a joyous celebration, and that continues for a week or more with no fasting and a lot of feasting.
So Orthodox Christians can understand what Muslims experience during Ramadan.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, there would be some differences. Muslims are fasting from sun up to sundown.
Correct.
And then can eat, as I understand it, anything. Well, let's see. There'd still be some dietary restrictions, mm-hmm. I guess. But but they could eat dairy. They could eat most meat. Whereas for Orthodoxies, it's a 24-hour-a-day fast.
Exactly. Okay. And my understanding, when they fast for Ramadan, they eat nothing the entire day.
Or drink.
Or drink anything. For us, we can eat things that are, you know, a bean burrito, for example, a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, something vegan. Okay. So we go through the day just abstaining from meat and dairy, a spiritual discipline which helps us prepare for, you know, the holy feast of the Nativity of Christ.
Now let's look forward to that feast a little bit because at least the Greeks I know are when they have a feast, they really have good food.
Oh, they do have a good
feast. Is that true in most of the traditions?
It is. It is. Orthodox people go through a great preparation so that the feast itself is joyous. It's full. Lavish tables, even times of Russia when they had hardship, they would make a special table for Pascha, for Easter, or for Christmas, any of the feasts of the church, because that's the way we signify to make something holy. Even dancing, singing, going door to door at this time with different carols. But the whole idea is to put a table out so that you knew it was something different, out of the ordinary, a way to bring family together and to enjoy the feast, to keep it holy.
Now, for the Orthodox, is it legitimate to use alcohol?
Yes. I think almost every table includes wine, for example, and always in moderation. But the use of alcohol is not forbidden, you know, in the Orthodox Church. The sense of getting drunk would be. Mm-hmm. To have a glass of wine with a feast is very appropriate. In fact, it's almost unheard of not to in the Greek culture, especially, or in the Serbian or Russian.
And is the disease of alcoholism a problem within the Orthodox tradition?
In some lands, I can speak for my own heritage, the Greek heritage. Again, you see almost every meal with beer or wine. Whenever they're consumed, or the heavy liqueur of ouzo, they always eat food with it. Mm. So you never see anyone drunk. You have one drink. It's about the social gathering. It's about the feast. And it's a very big shame if you have a person from the community, from the village, that is drunk. It's a shame to the family and a part. And we don't see that. We hadn't seen, in fact, in Greece, they hadn't had a alcohol problem or a severe drug problem like they do now. And many surmise it was with the influx of MTV in Greece. They kind of gave way to that type of lifestyle. So they definitely have a sense of propriety when it comes to drinking.
Now, our Russian friends don't have the same reputation.
So I understand they love their vodka. And, you know, a pious person would know how to control themselves and to keep that, because the body is the temple of God, and they would want to keep it holy.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell us about the actual feast of Christmas. Before we talk about the problems of the secular encroachment into that feast day, what are appropriate ways for the Orthodox to celebrate Christmas, whether it begins on December 25 or January 7?
Right. Well, the preparation begins, and then the folks on the day of the feast would come to several services, culminating with a divine liturgy where they would receive Holy Communion. And then they would go from the church and gather as families and enjoy one another's company and be with friends, and to set that day apart, not let anything get in the way of its celebration. By the way, that begins the feast. And then for 12 days, we continue that feast, hence the song, The 12 Days of Christmas. That's the whole sense of the church. Oftentimes here in America, Steve, I'm flabbergasted on the night of Christmas or the next day to see the Christmas tree already in the trash. It makes no sense to us because the feast begins on the 25th or the 7th, if you will, and it continues for that joyous period. With Orthodox Christians, when they greet one another during this time, they say, Christ is born. Hmm. And the person that receives that greeting says, glorify him. And so the whole sense is through this time we live in that joyous celebration that the Lord took on flesh. It's about the incarnation, the birth of our Lord and Savior.
Now, this focus of feasting and celebrating for 12 days, does it involve gift giving?
It does. In the Orthodox tradition, there's various traditions when to give the gifts. In the Greek tradition, for example, they don't give it on Christmas Day. They give it on January the 1st, where St. Basil is commemorated. He was known to give to the poor, much like St. Nicholas. So that's when they exchange gifts. Here in America, we've adopted more of the Christmas gift, the Gimbel's and Macy's kind of version of how to exchange gifts. But that begins with some of that encroachment, some of the glitter, the wrappings, rather than the real essence of why we're giving the gifts and what the celebration is about.
Is there a focus on children?
Always. Always within the church. It's such a joyous thing because, you see, we baptize from infancy. And so to see a family come up together at this time and to receive Holy Communion together as a family unit, and special songs that the children will sing, carols from various traditions. We just had a program today. Our Greek school put on a Christmas program. And little 5- and 4-year-olds were singing, you know, Christmas carols in Greek. And there was a lot of joy there. Even if you didn't understand Greek, it didn't matter because you could see the joy of the children and for them to embrace their faith in a very special way.
Now, a Greek Orthodox priest may marry, and you're married, and you have children.
I do. I have twins.
And they're 5 years old.
They are.
And are they good singers?
They are good singers. They take after their mom.
And do you teach them Greek?
We do. They're actually a part of that Greek school. Mm-hmm. And we speak a little Greek to them in the home, although both my wife and I are English speakers. We're both born second and third generation Americans. And so we both speak predominantly English in the home, but we use some Greek as well.
Why do you, as a family, consider it important, and why does the church consider it important to offer those kind of classes?
Especially, we just had a speaker here, Frederica Matthews Green from National Public Radio and BeliefNet. And one of the things she told the university students on campus was the fact that they should learn Greek from the standpoint of understanding the New Testament better in the original tongue. And it made a lot of sense. It's something that those of us of Greek heritage are very thankful and want to have our kids continue and understand their heritage and know where, you know, their ancestors came from. But we've often toyed with our Romanian families to have a Romanian class or so forth and so on. There's a lot of groups. We'd be open to that as well.
Now, in the Orthodox tradition, tell us a little bit, particularly for our Catholic listeners, how Orthodoxy separated from the Catholic Church, and at what point that happened.
It happened over a couple hundred years, but the finalization was in the year 1054. A portion of the creed known as the Filioque had been added. One pope said to remove it, that the Nicene Creed should be left alone. It was the creed of the church. Not one part of the church had a right to change it. In the process, another pope came in and said, no, it's fine, Pope Nicholas. The Orthodox could not accept the addition to the creed, and so they removed his name from commemoration. He, having heard this, sent some delegates to Constantinople, heard the liturgy, heard that his name was not mentioned as Pope of Rome, and then they issued a bull of excommunication upon the altar, Cardinal Humberto, and the East became the East, and the West became the West. They were one church up until that point, and I think the West was actually not as powerful at that point in history, but was becoming very powerful. And the East had a lot of power, and they didn't know it, but they were losing it rapidly. And they really wanted that estrangement. Remember that the Pope of Rome, the Bishop of Rome, had the first in the sense of leadership. He was regarded as the leader of all the churches. He had an equal vote to the rest, but we honored him. And so I think the East said, well, if we're on our own now, Constantinople's in charge, and a lot of politics came into being, and it really hurt the church, because the church, the Christian church, was no longer talking with one voice. It was talking east and west, and all the Orthodox patriarchs, Jerusalem, Antioch, Constantinople, Alexandria, were still speaking the same talk, but now certain things would creep in that were different in the Roman West.
Orthodoxy in America is relatively new. When this country was founded, it was mainly Protestants who came to the United Americas and the United States. When did a significant portion of Orthodox folks come to the U.S.?
Well, don't forget that a lot came through Alaska, because it was part of Russia. So we had a great sense of Orthodoxy in Alaska, and still do. Mm. And they trickled down through the West Coast, even as far as San Francisco. Mm. That was back in the 1700s.
Really?
But the influx of most Orthodox that came to this land was probably in the early 1900s. 1920s through 40s had a lot of Orthodox people coming to this land and establishing churches. I know that the first church in America was recently destroyed in the Katrina catastrophe because it was in New Orleans. It was a shipping town, so it makes sense that the first church would be down there. They actually landed on in Florida in St. Augustine, but the first Greeks built a church in 1821, I believe, in New Orleans, in that proper.
When was your congregation established at Three Hierarchs Orthodox Church in Champaign?
We actually just celebrated our 40th anniversary as a parish just this year. But there were people here for 10 and 15 and 20 years before that. Mm-hmm. And what they would do is they'd bring a priest from Decatur or from Chicago once or twice a year to perform the liturgy. He'd have to bring his chalice and his icons and his censer and a lot of work, and then they'd come down and celebrate a liturgy and go back. And on Saturday of this weekend, I was just in Danville at St. Barbara's Chapel there. We have a little chapel there. It actually outdates Three Hierarchs Church, and the faithful are there, and, you know, they keep the faith out there, and we service them from our parish. And so we're 40 years old, and our parish is growing by the grace of God.
Do you happen to know when the first Orthodox students or faculty came to the University of Illinois?
I do, and it was in the 1800s.
Wow.
In fact, the first international student at the University of Illinois was a Greek man named Panayotis Yamavios. He graduated in agriculture and became the secretary of agriculture for Greece when he went back. So the first international graduate of this university is from Greece. So it's
fascinating.
Oddly enough.
Yeah. He was probably welcomed by the University Y, because the Y in those early days provided the international student program
for
the university, and welcomed students when they arrived here, typically by train. From Chicago, tried to find them housing and tried to find them ways to improve their English and that sort of thing. And then later, the Y faculty or Y staff member who worked with the international students was hired by the university to help begin the university program for international students.
Wow, I didn't know that history.
It's an interesting past. We're talking today on Keeping the Faith with Father George Pyle, priest of the Three Hierarchs Orthodox Church in Champaign, and we're talking about the keeping the holidays holy and the issue of secular encroachment into the feast days. And we've tried to lay the groundwork for that discussion by talking about what the feast days are for the Orthodox. And for listeners who have a question or would like to make a comment, in Champaign-Urbana, Call us at 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. You can reach Keeping the Faith live here on Sundays 5 to 6 anywhere in the country if you're listening on the internet by punching in 1-800-222-9455. So anywhere it's a toll-free call where you hear this program, punch in 1-800-222-WILL, and you can reach our guest in the studio and be part of this conversation. I see we have a caller on line one. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please.
Well, I wasn't going to call about the secularization and whatnot.
That's quite all right. Any comments, okay.
Okay. I really admire the Orthodox Church in this country, at any rate, for not getting involved in politics in the same way the Catholic Church has done, spearheading campaigns against abortion and birth control and the business of birth control pills and what is and is not an abortion and so forth and so on. That's something I really appreciate, that they don't meddle in people's private lives.
Well, we actually, I appreciate your comments. We actually have strong statements of that and discipline when it comes down to, for example, abortion. But our approach is not through the political means. Our approach is through the lives of our people, to educate them that life is holy. And from that standpoint, we work very hard on making consistent statements of teaching our people so that they understand how important every human life is. And so that's our goal, is to help our people become holy so that they can stand righteously before God.
Are you also against the death penalty?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Well, very good. Very consistent.
You'll find some fathers that would speak for it, but the majority of the church says life is holy. Even if someone, and this might have a few people to call in, but even like someone who's done some terrible things, like Osama bin Laden has been reported to have done, we would want him to have the time for repentance, to come to his senses and say, that which I did was wrong. So we would see every life, no matter who they are and what evil they've perpetrated, as having the potential to be holy. Does that make sense?
Yes. Okay.
I'm glad you called.
Thank you for the call. What about war?
There is no just war in the Orthodox Church. There is no just war. We are about peace. We understand that there is also a time for defense. And it's a very awkward issue for us. St. Basil said the most interesting thing. He said, if you're required to go and serve, if you were drafted, you must go and serve. When you come back, he said to the soldier, you must repent as someone who was a murderer, because we can never say that life is just expendable, no matter if we were defeating our quote-unquote enemies. Mm-hmm. So from that standpoint, we remain consistent that every life is holy, no matter what side of the battlefield. Interesting, Steve, at every liturgy, we remember those in public service, and we remember the armed forces everywhere, not just our own armed forces. Mm. We ask blessings from the sense of defense, not the sense of aggression.
Is the Orthodox Church, let's see, you wouldn't qualify as a pacifist church, because you allow people to serve if called. But,
right.
But what about volunteering to serve in the military?
If
only in an occasion of being attacked?
If someone feels that is their way to serve out of defense, we would allow that, absolutely.
Mm. Interesting. We have another caller, again on a local line, line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith.
Yes. Hi. I'm very grateful for this program, and I wanted to ask a very relevant question. I'm a nurse. Is there an exception to this thing about fasting? I understand the spiritual discipline of fasting for people who cannot. I cannot fast, for example. Can you comment on that, please?
Great question, and thank you for bringing that up. As a spiritual father, I set the canon or the rules of fasting for each person. That for someone that comes to me and they say, I have to take my medication in the morning, I need to eat something before coming to communion, I say, yes, eat something, a piece of bread. Will that work for you? We come up with a diet plan that works. If there's someone like that is anemic, And they need to be eating red meat. We'll figure out a different way for them to fast. Maybe we'll take away their favorite milkshake or their, you know, there's a sense of discipline. So absolutely, there's a way that the spiritual father adjusts the rules so that everybody's still fasting, but it's proper for their health. The actual canon of the church say that people who are traveling or people that are ill need not to fast. They have other concerns in their life. And you can imagine the traveling in days of old when you may not find food or an opportunity to fast. You had to eat what was there. And so the church was very, very practical in its approach.
In this day of eating disorders and people who are anorexic and bulimic, is fasting a danger?
It could be. But don't forget that what we see here is the anorexia and the bulimia is really more about the self-image. And as the spiritual father, I would want to delve into that area to have them understand that they're a child of God and loved, no matter how they view themselves, to come into that relationship where they have a loving relationship with God. And so if it was an issue of someone not wanting to eat because they really are anorexic, but they're guising it under fasting, I probably, as a spiritual father, would recommend a second helping from time to time, something very helpful in their diet.
What about the temptation that's there for more of us, perhaps, in this culture where overeating is more of a temptation and a problem? What kind of spiritual guidance can you give for people like me?
Well, I'm glad this is radio because I'm much more well-rounded, Steve, than you are. It is a sin. Gluttony is a sin. And we really have to be honest about it. We really need to be using food and our resources on every level to treat our bodies as the temple as being holy. So I would say that's a sin that I have that I need to work on. And by the way, when I fast, it's much easier for me to keep my diet because it's a spiritual discipline. Mm-hmm. I'm doing this for God. I'm doing this in relationship with Him.
We have another caller again on our number one line. You're on Keeping the Faith.
Yeah. I have an in-law that who has celiac disease where she's allergic to gluten. And she's asked for permission to use a rice wafer with communion, and this was denied. And I think it's been denied, all over the country for Catholics. Mm. And I was wondering what the position of the Orthodox Church was on that.
Well, in our church, we give both elements. We give what was the bread and the wine, the body and blood. So for this person, for example, as they came for Holy Communion, I would give them more of the wine, if you will, just a speck of what the bread was, a very tiny, minute sense, because we all receive from the same chalice. So by this way, I would, by the way, talk with her after Holy Communion and say, how was that? Are you having a reaction? Is this causing some conflict health-wise in your life? And that's the way I would approach it in that case.
But you wouldn't allow her to have a rice wafer instead?
Well, see, we don't have the wafers. We all have one host, which is from wheat, and I would make sure that she got a very tiny, even less than a crumb, if you will, but more she would receive the wine element, the blood of Christ, in that respect. You see, I don't have different wafers laying around. Everybody receives from that one portion.
Well, I mean, the celiacs are willing to provide the wafers so that they could be blessed with the other.
Right. We don't use wafers, so that's the problem. We use it actually from a loaf of bread that is made by one of the faithful. So we don't use the wafers.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Do you have rules that come to you like about that, that you have no control over? Or can you, as a priest, make certain decisions for people who have different needs?
There is a group of canons which guide my thought process, but like this question, which wasn't known in times before, I would consult my bishop, I would consult other priests and say what I know that this has come up for people that have a wheat allergy, for example, and that's how it's perceived. It's such a small amount that most physicians would agree that that would not cause an imbalance. But we also wouldn't want to put someone's life in jeopardy. Mm-hmm. I could also see a great allowance if there was a person by a bishop saying, put that rice make a loaf of bread out of rice flour, something like that, where it wouldn't cause, you know, wouldn't have the gluten.
And what about people who might be alcoholic, who might say, I'd like to have grape juice but not wine?
Well, it's interesting. We have a priest in the Orthodox Church who wrote a 12-step book where he was an alcoholic. And there is no connection for alcoholics because they're given such a small, minuscule amount, and it's been added to the communion some very hot water, which kind of dilutes it, and they receive the bread with it, the body of Christ with it as well. So we have not had that occurrence. But then again, if someone came to me and said, Father, I'm an alcoholic, it's enough to get me started. When they came up for communion, I would arrange the communion in such a way that they weren't getting as much of the alcohol contact. I would make it more towards the body of Christ that they were receiving, yet it would still be soaked in that. So, and then we'd work on it as well.
We're visiting today with Father George Pyle from the Three Hierarchs Greek Orthodox Church, Orthodox Church in Champaign. Father Pyle, when are your services? Are they open to the public?
They are open to the public. Our Sunday service is at 9:30 every Sunday. We have a divine liturgy, and we do not have open communion, but we would be more than welcome to bless people that come, and if they came up for communion, although we do not have open communion, we'd give them a piece of the blessed bread and all blessings that we could.
Well, we're getting back to our discussion about secular encroachment into the feast days with Father Pyle in just a moment. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs, which are supported in part by the University YMCA, where I'm the executive director. The University Y has been on the campus of the University of Illinois since 1873. It is the oldest continuous student organization on campus and the oldest religious organization. The Y at the U of I does not have a pool or a gym or a fitness center, but does have many programs for students and other people in the community, lecture series, chances for discussion, dealing with issues of our time, as well as many opportunities for particularly students to be involved in social action and community service and learning leadership in the process. Over the Christmas holidays, we have many students who will be doing service projects. We have 12 different service trips through alternative spring break programs at the Y. And before school begins again in January, students will be going for a week of service as far away as California, working with the homeless, working with people with AIDS, working with Native Americans on reservations, doing many many important issues of service, 12 students about on each trip, and we're very proud of these students who will use part of their vacation time to serve others. One of the other programs of the Y is our Communiversity classes. This is a free university, meaning there's it's open to anybody, and no credit courses. And people who'd like to teach a class starting in January may talk to our coordinator. Call Paul at the Y, 337-1514 this week, or check out our website, universityymca.org, and then click on Communiversity. Courses from martial arts to ballroom dancing to car repair. Anything that community members would like to design and teach, you can do that. Some instructors have been with us for more than 20 years, but we're always interested in new and exciting class topics that people in the community might develop. So if you have something you might like to teach, you can get some money for it, and people who take the class pay very little, but if you get enough of them, it can be a nice little bonus. Do call us at the Y. The classes will be starting in January. We do need applications before December 30. This is the time of year when many people make charitable contributions. The Y is the oldest charity at the University of Illinois. And if you'd like to make a contribution to help us with our mission with students and others, you may make a contribution and send it to 1001 South Wright Street, Champaign, Illinois, 61820, University YMCA. You may also donate a vehicle, a car, a truck, a motorcycle, a van, a boat, anything with a title. We're happy to take, and as we sell it, you can then take our selling price off your taxes as a charitable donation. If you have questions about that program or making a donation, please call me, Steve Shoemaker, at the University Y. Well, let's get back to our guest, Father George Pyle, talking about the holidays and how to keep them holy. What are some of the most serious problems that you see as an Orthodox priest that affect you and your people as you try to celebrate the way you hope to celebrate?
I think, first of all, the holidays, I've got to be reminded that they are holy days and days of feasts within the church to keeping things holy. I think the Jews really understood this with keeping the Sabbath holy. They were honoring the Creator. They were celebrating creation. And nothing happened on the Sabbath. And I think, Steve, you and I remember times in this country where on Sundays, for example, stores were not open. And people were observing holy days with things being closed. And I think we've let the word holy become, in our vernacular, a four-letter word, something dirty, something wrong, something odd. It's almost better not to be holy in any way. And this is a great sadness.
Holier than thou.
Yeah, self-righteous. Mm-hmm. What we're really talking about is becoming godlike. It's a tenet of the Orthodox Christian faith to strive for theosis, becoming godlike in everything. The person that you deal with in the drive-through window, the people that are driving next to you, your next-door neighbor, your coworker, to treat them with love and holiness. And we see that especially here in Christmas time, so many distractions getting us away from what that feast is for those of us that are Christians or for those that are celebrating Hanukkah. What is that feast about and how to keep that holy and keep it set apart, for example? New Year's Day used to be celebrated with a great sense of holiness in terms of in the world, with special services, consecrating the year. Now it's become more of a time for partying and bringing in the new year like that. Can you think of the great departure? Rather than setting it apart for God, we're really setting it apart as a time for partying for ourselves. And this is something we need to work on as a society, because when we keep things holy, we set them apart, we elevate them. And these things we need to be doing in our life with everything that we do.
When the Orthodox celebrate Christmas, you do give gifts. How do you keep the secular notion of materialism and buying and selling and, mm-hmm. and my gift isn't as good as yours because it didn't cost as much. How do you deal with all that?
It's kind of funny because those that celebrate Christmas on January 7th get all their gifts at half price. So they have that. But the people that celebrate Christmas on January 7th, Steve, they say it's such a special day because it is still, it is calm, it is peaceful in the midst of everybody else running around on their normal January 7th day. So you see that you have stopped. It's kind of odd here because everything does stop on Christmas Day. Stores are closed, and which they should be. But to do that on a day when everybody's running around and just to be still and know that He is God, have that time with the Lord, bring your family into it, read some scripture at the table, say prayers together, things like that to make that day holy, to make that day set apart. Because it's the time, for those of us as Christians, it's the time when the Lord took on flesh, the incarnation, when he came here as a babe with His flesh to save us by rescuing us from our fallenness. So this is a place that we need to really work towards holiness, and there are tremendous distractions, school schedules, children's schedules, so forth and so on. It's hard to keep focused on God.
Since listeners to this program and, in fact, most programs on WILL Public Radio are very polite, I have to ask the nasty questions myself. So if you'll forgive me, what about the conflict between trying to keep a holiday holy and the problem of, since Christians are in the majority in this country, what comes when people who are Jews or Hindus or Buddhists or Muslims or whatever are sort of forced to deal with Christian holidays?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not very Christian about it.
No, and I always pray. I have many Jewish friends, and I contact them by email on the day before their holidays, especially Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. I think that we can honor each other's feasts. And I think that that is something that would be very good to do. And when it's a day, I thought there was a conflict for a group that you and I both belong to, the religious workers. I thought we had scheduled a meeting on Rosh Hashanah. And I was very disappointed. I didn't know how it happened. And I contacted one of my Jewish friends who's at Hillel, and he said, "No, Father, you have the date wrong."
I see.
But I was eager to know that we hadn't made that faux pas,
mm-hmm.
because I think that for our Jewish friends. By the way, I believe Hanukkah is on the 25th this year, but let's say for our Muslim friends, I think that this is a day that they can have a holiness in their own tradition. Doesn't honor Christmas in their own tradition just by spending with their family and their friends and having a day set apart.
We have another caller on line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead.
Hi, Father George. I have a question. I just read a news report that Willow Creek churches are going to be closed on Christmas Day this year to give their staff and families and people in their community a chance to spend time at home with their families. Any comment on that in regards to making the day holy?
I heard that news report today myself, and I was pretty surprised. From the Orthodox tradition, it doesn't make any sense, because when we gather as a church, that is where receiving Jesus Christ in the church, praying, singing praises to him, that's where it all begins. And I was astonished to know that, you know, churches close down on Christmas Day. There's no celebration of the Lord's birth. I think it's a big mistake. And maybe some of our callers would like to call in and take me to task on that. I mean it respectfully. I just can't understand how that can be. So
let's talk about money. Money often isn't talked about much in relation to religion, but the holidays can be very expensive. And for a poor family who sees on television middle-class and wealthy people in sitcoms and so on celebrating and at all the advertisements that are so skillfully used to manipulate people to want more things— How did the Orthodox deal with this?
As we talked about gluttony and the excessive food, I think the excessive things, materialism, is a huge problem. And our consumer mentality, I was talking about this in my sermon today, about when something's broke, we don't fix it, we replace it. There's something wrong here. And also for families that don't have, I mean, where is the church to help provide for those that don't have? And by the way, we're not talking about huge sums of money, but something that where people could go and buy gifts so that there is something. There's something nice about giving a gift. It's an expression of love. It's an expression of honor. And we should help, you know, the churches, not just the Orthodox Church, all the churches should be in a place to help those, especially around the holidays, to give to one another and to really address this materialism, because I think we're running into a very large problem here in America with this mentality. It almost denies that a person is created in the image and likeness of God. We want to look about the materialism, what they're wearing, what they have, their status, rather than looking deep into the eyes and seeing God in that person through the image and likeness. So I definitely think it's an issue that the churches collectively will have to deal with.
And yet the Orthodox, along with many other branches of Christianity, do give gifts to one another as a symbol of love and gratitude. And the earliest Christmas stories report that the astrologers or whoever they were from the East brought gifts to the Christ child of gold and frankincense and myrrh, expensive things of the time. And this Christmas is the celebration of Jesus taking on materiality, flesh. Mm-hmm. Where do you find a balance? Because certainly good things are to be enjoyed by Christians. So we're not all called to be hermits or...
Well, let's think of it this way. When we give gifts on Christmas Day, we are giving them to honor the gift we received in Jesus Christ as Christians. So our gift should be reflective of that. And so if I give my wife a gift, for example, that honors her, tells her, expresses to her how much I love her, I think that's fine. If it's a gift that I can't afford, if it's a gift that I haven't prepared for financially well enough, if it's a gift that is just so trivial, because we have to give gifts, you know, then that's when it creeps in. There is a very fine line. Mm-hmm. But what about the gift of time? I wanted to talk a little bit about that. Spending time with someone. Can you give a Christmas gift to someone, to an elderly person, to a shut-in, to a young person, to mentor for them, to be there for them over the course of this year? I think that this is something that is a valuable gift to be able to say to a person, this year, I want to spend some time with you. I want to meet with you weekly, monthly, whatever the case may be. I want to drive you, to your appointments that you need, because I can give you the gift of my time. I can give you the gift of my vehicle. I don't necessarily have those things. What a powerful gift. That's a human gift. That's a caring gift. And I hope that some of us right now are realigning our gifts, and maybe think of a couple of people in our churches and our parishes and our synagogues and in our workplaces that we could give them on a more personal level, giving them the gift of who we are.
We're down to our last 10 minutes on Keeping the Faith with our interview with Father George Pyle of the Greek Orthodox Church. Let me give the phone numbers again in case listeners would like to slip in a question or comment in our last 10 minutes, 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana. If it's a long-distance call, perhaps you're listening on the internet at will.uiuc.edu. You may call us toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. We do have another call. Let's go to line one. You're on Keeping the Faith.
Hi, Father George. Thank you very much. I'm enjoying this program.
I'm glad.
I have a demographic question for you. Do any of the Eastern Orthodox churches have black or African-American membership? I suspect the answer is no. But my second question would be, let us suppose black person or a black household considering conversion from some other faith, Roman Catholic or whatever, were to attend one of your services, I should think that they would be positively received. Will you elaborate on that just a little bit? Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you for your question. Actually, in my congregation, I have African Americans. I have some families from Ethiopia and Eritrea. I have a young lady from Uganda. So it is very colorful. And it is intended that way because, again, it's not about the race. It's about the worldly culture that they represent, and they come to us. So if an African-American family would like to embrace Orthodoxy and seek out Orthodoxy, they are more than welcome at our doors. Absolutely.
We have another caller on line two. You're on Keeping the Faith with Father George Pyle.
Yes. I called earlier, but I wanted to ask a question. We're a time-stressed society, and how do we protect ourselves against that problem, being time-stressed? I'm almost 70, so I'm beyond my prime, obviously. But anyway, I know that being matters. And how do we do it this Christmas? And I'll hang up and listen to your answer.
How do we deal with the issue of time and all the stresses that we have? That's a great question. We are doing too many things that are unnecessary. We have created so many gadgets in our life, the microwave, for example, to save us time. And yet we're not good managers of time. And perhaps we need to rescale back our lives and to look at them and to choose what is necessary and what is good. To spend some time with a book, a spiritual book, for example, could be a gift that one gives to oneself. To have the opportunity to spend time with other people. And maybe we can enjoy simultaneously things that we enjoy. For example, we might like listening to the Illini game or watching the Illini. That would be something that we could go and do with a friend who doesn't have anyone with them. Or perhaps we like to go to the library and check out books. That would be a great way. We're going to do that anyway. Just incorporate our neighbor down the road that doesn't have transportation. Let's be thinking out of the box, out of our normal schedules, so that we can reach out to people and give them a gift of ourselves. And there's only so much time in the day. I know that as much as you do. And let's do a better job of time management. I'm speaking for myself, and I bet a few other callers as well, a few other listeners.
Orthodoxy has been distinguished from the rest of Christianity for about 1,000 years.
Correct.
And yet, in some ways, it seems like Orthodox Christianity has changed less in those 1,000 years than some of the other branches of Christianity, certainly Protestant and perhaps Roman Catholicism as well. Why is that?
It's by design. We believe that what we are living, what we are worshiping, what we are practicing has been handed down to us from the apostles. And because of that, we are very set on not changing. We don't try to be progressive. We don't try to be on the cutting edge. We don't try to do something contemporary. We're doing things in God's time. And so when some aspects come up of change, we are really cognitively working against just the sense of change for change's sake. There are certain things in the liturgy that have not changed, but you'll notice when you come, we pray for those who travel by land, sea, and of course now air. Well, that's a change. And so we reflect where our culture has come because it's a need for those who travel by air, for example. But at the same token, we're not willing to change what we've been doing with what we've been handed down to. Consequently, in the last 10 to 20 years, Orthodoxy in America especially has undergone a huge amount of growth. In my own parish, in 7 years, we've grown about 100 families in that time period because people are looking for something that's constant, something that's sure, that's not going to be changing. And especially in matters of faith, Steve, we're not going to budge. This is what we believe Christ handed down to the apostles that we've maintained. We're going to keep doing so.
The topic for today is dealing with secular encroachments into the feast days. Is there anything that the church, the Christian church, the Orthodox church, can learn from secular culture? For example, the women's movement, that women are intelligent human beings, that they're equal to men. And yet the church often has not welcomed women at the same stage, at the same level as men. Is that an issue where the church could learn from secular culture?
Well, it's interesting. We often think that the church was not, in some cases, was not fair to women. But when we look back at the history of the church, we know that Phoebe was a deaconess. We know that Mary Magdalene was an equal to the apostles. We know that St. Helen was an equal to the apostles. So you see a place within the church for women to have roles. And yet there are some movements out there. One thing that I liked about the women's movement is giving women equal pay for the jobs that they were doing. I don't think we've still reached that, by the way. But I'm a full supporter of that because each person, it says in the New Testament, there's neither male nor female, and there's neither Jew nor Greek in the kingdom of God. Well, we believe that. There's this sense of true being with the image and likeness of each individual being created by God. So we would see those secular movements. But sometimes those movements have such a departure from what we see as the truth. It's sometimes just issues that exist just for the sake of issues. And that's something that we could not see. We'd want to find out what's the holy aspect of it. A woman is a holy person of God. A man is a holy person of God. That's what we want to look at.
We're down to our last 90 seconds, so let me ask you an easy question. What about science? What about creation? What about evolution?
We have a great relationship between science because God is creator. We know that he is powerful and he sustains all things. I think it's very sad that we have discussions going on that say it's Darwinism or nothing. And really, the Orthodox are not creationists in the literal sense. But we embrace the fact that, you know, God created this on the first day, the second day. What is a day to God? Is not the twinkling of his eye 1,000 years to God? Isn't that in the New Testament? So what is that in the sense of God? One thing that we would have to say is that God is creator and sustainer of the universe. And we hold that to be very true. So we have a very good relationship with science because Orthodoxy sees that there's a lot of truth that we can learn from just looking at our world. I thought you said that was an easy question, Steve.
I want to thank our guest today on Keeping the Faith. We've been talking with Father George Pyle, who is the Orthodox priest at the Three Hierarchs Church in Champaign. What's the address again?
It's 2010 Three Hierarchs Court on off of Devonshire between Fox Drive and Neal.
And if people have questions, they may call you at?
352-3452.
I want to thank our callers also for their comments and good questions as always. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these programs. I'm the executive director of the University YMCA at the University of Illinois. Our coming up on Keeping the Faith, we have some interesting guests in the weeks ahead. We'll be talking on December 25th. A pre-recorded program will be broadcast with Cliff Kindy, who is a member of the Christian Peacemaking Teams. Cliff is just back from 5 months in Iraq. He spent 5 months each of the last 3 years in Iraq, both before the war and during the war. Our listeners will know that there are four members of a similar Christian peacemaking team that are currently have been kidnapped in Iraq and threatened with death. The interview we did with Cliff Kindy was taped last month. He's well. He's back in his home in Indiana. But it should be a very interesting. It is a very interesting program since I participated in it. I know, and that'll be coming up on December 25th. In January, we'll be talking about Islam and Buddhism and Judaism here on Keeping the Faith. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
What happens when we die? Dr. Rachel Naomi Remen says much more than you think. Not so, says novelist Jim Crace. He thinks we're just flesh to begin with and become meat after we die. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time, under the best of our knowledge, we focus on death and how an honest reckoning with a grim reaper can help us live a better life. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 here on WILL Urbana. Next time on PRI's The World, computer viruses are big business worldwide. They were once the product of thrill-seeking hackers. Today's viruses come from profit-seeking pirates. They can take control of your PC to spy on you, steal from you, and use your computer to send out spam. Your desktop may not be your own. That story and the day's news next time on The World, tomorrow at 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. here on AM 580. Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, partly cloudy with a low around 2 degrees and northwest winds around 10 miles per hour during the evening, then becoming light. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high around 20 degrees and west winds around 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly clear with a low around 11 degrees and southwest winds around 10 miles per hour in the evening, becoming light. It's 6 p.m. This American Life is next.